radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Hey, how's it going, Paul?
Oh, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
Laramie Tunsil did an introductory press conference yesterday with the Washington Commanders, and I think you should feel better that they've moved on from him, having watched it and heard it. Now, he said all the things that you expect a big name acquisition to say when introducing himself to a new team. He said he expects to make a huge impact on the Commanders this coming season. And maybe he will. I don't know if it'll be from a leadership perspective, but from a play perspective, can totally see him getting things done. Tunsil was asked a variety of different questions. I don't know how many times he said, it's a business, over the course of this interview, but it was at least 6 to 7 times. And in a question where he was asked about what went wrong with the Houston Texans offensive line last year, he mentioned it. Here's what he said went down.
What happened last year? That's tough because we could have did a lot of things better, myself included. We could have protected CJ better. We could have. It's a lot of things that played a part into what happened last year. So I don't think we should just pinpoint one thing. But again, I just can't take it personal. I really don't think it was that. I honestly think it was just like a business move and, you know, a business move just trying to pay the young guys. I don't think it had anything to do with performance last year or the O-line performance last year. You know, to me, again, I'm going to keep saying it. I know I sound redundant, but, you know, I don't think it was anything personal. I don't think it was off the plate from last year.
Off the play from last year at the very end. Doesn't think it was that. I mean, to his credit, he really did not seem to take this trade personally.
It's a business.
Again, he kept on saying.
To be fair, he knows the business side better than anybody.
Well, he probably cares more about the business side more than anybody. And to his credit, I mean, he gets paid because of it.
He knows it. He knows it's a business.
I say this in the same way Skip Bayless would say it, but it's unfortunate that the last syllable in Laramie's first name is me, Lara, me. Because I do think Laramie Tunsil is about Laramie Tunsil. And he's not really as much of a team player as you would like. That's not to say he was a bad teammate. It's just he is focused on what he is doing. Everyone else, do your thing. I'm not going to have any say or input on that. So we'll see how much of an impact he has in Washington, and that's still the mindset. I'm annoyed with how he answered that question because he said there were a lot of things, but he didn't elaborate on any of them. What were they? And okay, maybe if a Houston-based reporter was there, they would have asked him to pinpoint what went wrong. But I want to know what went wrong. He doesn't think he was traded because of the performance of the offensive line last year, or his performance last year, or his play, as he said. But, I mean, that had to have been a bit of a factor in this move. It's probably more about paying some of the young guys. Derek Stingley Jr., Will Anderson, CJ Stroud contracts are coming up too. But I think it is very fair to make the argument that because the offensive line was so bad last season, moving on from Laramie Tunsil was a little bit easier and also probably ended up getting the Texans back less than they would have in years past. So more of the same from Laramie Tunsil on that front. But this is the reason you should feel better that they've moved on from him, even though they do have to find a way to replace him, which I do not think will be easy. Laramie Tunsil's comments about the penalties, he says going forward, he's going to cut down on them.
I kind of just like challenging myself to find new challenges in my game to get better at. And so every year I try to find something like, I can do this better, or I want to do this better, or I want to be known for this, or, You know, so I kind of just put that chip on my shoulder by myself. It's really just me versus me at the end of the day. You know, especially there's a lot of things I want to work on, like those 19 penalties I had last season was unacceptable. So that's something I want to address for sure, getting that number down or even having none. You know, I want to keep growing as a player, honestly, as a pass blocker, a run blocker. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm always trying to improve in each of those fields. So.
Everyone's trying to improve, you would think, in the NFL, or find better ways to get the most out of themselves as their careers go on and their talent, their skills, their physical ability starts to deteriorate, because it does happen to everybody out there. But it was interesting hearing him say that, hey, I'm going to be working on the penalties, the 19 penalties I got called for last year. It's interesting because, first off, last year, when asked about the penalties in the moment, he very often suggested that referees were targeting him. Well, they should. There, I mean, you constantly fall start and line up illegally, probably trying to get an edge on defensive players. And offensive players get enough edges as it is. So that was unfair. So they should have targeted you in that game against the Vikings. But there was always this element during the season of, well, yeah, like we got penalized a lot. We can do things better. But they never improved at those things. And when Laremy Tunsil says that he's going to try and improve on the penalties in Washington, D.C., well, remember that he had this to say at his press conference in 2020 going into his second season with the Texans.
I have a follow-up. I'm going to go ahead
and throw this out there. My main goal is to fix the penalties I had last year. That was one of the main things I wanted to work on and work with Deshaun this offseason.
He said this already. He said he's going to work on the penalties already. He never has. So you're hearing it again. What's the saying? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. So he's not fooling the Texans anymore. And I suppose this would be the equivalent of fooling the Commanders once, say the penalties stay up. But is he going to get better at that? Probably not. And while I still think he was a good player, the penalties were infuriating last season. The timing, always unfortunate. Almost always felt like it was happening in the midst of a good Texans drive. Set them up in a first and long, second and long, third and long. They weren't able to overcome it. They punt the ball. The offense underachieves. And it never got better. And you know that he was aware that he was the reason for these penalties happening over and over again. So he's saying he is going to get better at this in Washington. And I wish him the best of luck. I hope he is able to figure it out. I don't think he will. This has been him his whole career. He's always trying to get that edge, get this quicker start against defensive linemen. He will be called for false starts. He will be called for illegal formations. He will be called for all sorts of stuff. So it's going to be tough to replace Laremy Tunsil, and I don't think that the Texans plan to replace any of their offensive linemen right now is a good one, as I ranted about on Friday. But hearing him say something he's already said about improving his biggest weakness over his career, I think it's further proof that no matter how hard he works on it, he's just not going to get better at it.
No, I mean, like 19 penalties is just so many.
Insane.
Last year. And, I mean, to do it week in, week out for, I mean, 19 penalties, that's over one per game that he's putting in there last year. So I think that it is a little bit of a Tiger doesn't change his stripes kind of thing, where maybe it's not 19, maybe it's, he could cut it in half and it'd be 9 or 10 penalties next year, and that is so much better, but that's still so many penalties for an offensive lineman, especially one of his caliber, because he's not getting the holding where, you know, he kind of gets beat and to save his quarterback's life, he's holding a edge rusher. Like, no, it is the stuff that you mentioned, where it is him just trying to get the little extra margins on the snap or where he lines up. That's where he gets called for, and that's as simple as like, hey, dude, take a half step forward, and now you don't get called for it was something like 3 or 4 illegal formations. Like,
yeah.
Just take a half step forward.
But I think he's of the mindset that I got to do whatever I can to get that edge.
Yeah, you line. I mean, what? There's whatever 600 plays or however many that he's lining up illegally. If they only call five of them, that's 590 that he's getting away with it. I get it, but also, dude, like, come on.
Let's be honest. What's more likely? Laremy Tunsil works on cutting the penalties down, or Laremy Tunsil works on another shortcut so that he can do the things that he has been doing his whole career?
Yeah.
It's the latter.
Yeah.
And honestly, if I were in his shoes, I would also do the latter. Like, working on the penalties, no, you're working on a different way to game the system if that's what you've been doing. And hey, if it works out, great. He'll get another 3-year, $80 million contract. All guaranteed.
That's what you're going to ask. Is he going to work on the penalties or work on his new contract?
I would work on my new contract if I'm him. I mean, it's coming up.
Last time he got traded, he got locked up immediately.
Yeah.
No, not immediately, but he got locked up, I think, that same offseason.
So maybe that's what he puts the pressure on the Commanders to do right now, instead of working on the penalty side of things. How do you do that during the offseason? I guess you, like, hang out with Jaden Daniels a lot.
Yeah. OTAs, you know. Oh, no, wait. Probably won't be there.
Definitely won't be there. See, that's the funny thing. Like, hey, if you're going to work on these things, you got to put in the extra time.
Yeah.
At least when you can. And look, it doesn't necessarily have to be OTAs. You can individually work out with Jaden Daniels if you want. In that 2020 press conference that I played the clip from, Tunsil said, well, I didn't have enough of an offseason to get to work with Deshaun Watson. And it's funny because little did we know that he was just never going to show up for off seasons. He had been traded relatively late in the summer. I feel like the Laremy Tunsil trade to the Texans was in July. I'm looking it up off the top of my head. When was it? We will find that on the other side. You want to chime in on Laremy Tunsil, 713-780-3776 to call to text. Do you actually believe that Tunsil will get better at the penalty side of things? How much are the Texans going to miss him? And now that he's gone, where does Derek Stingley rank among the best Texans on the team? All of that on the table. Stick around. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, most interactive sports talk show in Houston.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So perhaps that excuse Tunsil had about penalties in 2020 was warranted, given that he was traded from the Dolphins to the Texans on August 31st for two first-round picks and a second-round pick. Man, so much. But do you expect him going forward to get better at something that he's never gotten better at? I just don't believe it. Most interactive sports talk show in Houston, some comments on the text line. If the refs were against you, why did you false start so much, Laremy Tunsil? Actually, check that. My bad, I read that text wrong. If it was you against you, then why did you false start so much, Laremy Tunsil? It's a good question. Didn't feel like there was a sense of urgency from anyone in the Texans offensive line to improve the very visibly bad things over the course of last year. And in fact, there was at times pushback from those offensive linemen to any criticism that they were getting. And that rubbed me the wrong way. From the 832, do you think the Commanders are doing more for Jaden Daniels than the Texans are? I don't know, man. I mean, they signed Joe Mixon last offseason. They signed Stephon Diggs. I think if you're looking at the Texans' offensive line, you could certainly say the Commanders are doing more. The Bears are even doing more. And I do have some questions about that, but they did a lot for him last year. There was a certain point where Stroud has to elevate everyone around him. And it didn't happen last year for whatever reason.
I was going to say, like, we are pretending like they're both rookies, or no, CJ Stroud, after his rookie year, they built around him. They didn't. Remember last season?
Yeah.
Remember?
They pushed their chips into the middle of the table.
Yeah.
And things actually got worse on the offensive line.
If anything, they kind of did it more so than the Commanders have so far this offseason.
For sure.
And so, yeah, I mean, year two, you just can't do it again, or else every team would have an all-star, or actually half the teams would have an all-star team. Half the teams would stink out loud. And that's not how the NFL works. So, I think the Texans, they've done enough. The problem was that the tackle that they signed a giant deal to, they traded. The other tackle they signed a pretty big deal to, underperformed and had to play guard. The guard that they drafted in the first round was unplayably bad. The center that they drafted in the second round got beat out by the center that they drafted in the sixth round, yeah, more or less. And the guard that they traded for and then paid also was one of the worst in football.
Yep.
That's what went wrong. They made the moves. They just didn't work out.
Seems bad. All of those things seems bad. But they did try, at the very least.
And trying, you know.
It's half the battle.
It is half
the
battle.
But sadly, it's half the battle.
Jeff Bagwell told Nick Casario to do something.
You got to do something. You got to do something. Yeah, Jeff Bagwell told Cam Smith, you got to do something to make us want to do something. And he's starting to do something. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you.
And thank you, Aldous Snow, as well.
From Infant Sorrow, from Forgetting Sarah Marshall. What a great song that was. And then, of course, the spinoff movie, Get Him to the Greek.
Yes.
Another good movie, which features a jailed artist named Diddy, who actually was pretty good in that acting role.
He was awesome in that movie.
Pretty good. Diddy was pretty good in that movie. Surprise.
Little did we know he was kind of just playing himself.
More than kind of. Yeah. I got to watch that movie again just to remember the Diddy parts, I guess. I don't think they were that bad. Like, as bad as been as...
No, but does he?
There was less baby oil.
Yeah, no, they don't get into that. But I think he does. Doesn't he drug Jonah Hill at one point?
I think he does. allegedly in the movie. Allegedly in the movie.
Yeah, in the movie.
Right.
In this movie that we're trying to remember from, I don't know, the last time I seen it.
I am alleging that he may have or may not have
done it in the movie.
Drugged Jonah Hill's character with his character in the movie.
Okay.
Derek Stingley got paid. Where does he rank among the Texans as far as who's the best player on the team? Because Laremy Tunsil's gone. You got Nico Collins. You got Will Anderson. You obviously have C.J. Stroud. And you have Derek Stingley.
I think that's the group.
That's the four. If you really want to make a push, I think Danielle Hunter is not too far away. Perhaps he's five. And then Joe Mixon, also fairly close.
Yeah.
Those are probably your six best players.
I think Anderson 1, Stingley 2.
Ooh. Why Anderson 1?
He's really good. And maybe I'm doing a little bit of pass rusher over cornerback. It's hard not to, like, have that come. If you just want to do, like, pure, like, who, like, Stingley is maybe the best. I mean, if not the best cornerback in the league, number two to Patrick Surtain Jr.
Right. That's where I'm at, where I think you have to put Stingley above Anderson, but because Anderson is one of the best pass rushers in the league, but I don't think any of us would say he's the best pass rusher in the league, where Stingley, you could say he's the best corner in the league.
So, but the thing is, that is more dependent on how good other guys in the league are at that position, where it's like, it's not Anderson's fault that there's, you know, Myles Garrett.
True.
And TJ Watt and Max Crosby and Trey Hendrickson. But I think just as far as like how they, I guess it's more like how important they are on the Texans, where it's like who drives the most winning for the Texans. I'd put Anderson above Stingley. Now, it is 1-2, and I think it's those two guys pretty solidly. But yeah, I would lean Anderson over Stingley.
River to the Sea comments on Twitch. Stingley's better than Sauce. Yeah, where you been the last year? This has been. Yeah. I think this has been obvious since the start of this season. But if you really know ball, since the end of the 2023-2024 season.
Yeah,
you know that's where Stingley like took off, and then we all started roasting Sauce Gardner for having like less interceptions than Stingley did in five games.
One career interception or whatever
it is. Because Stingley had like lapped him very quickly.
Yeah.
And look, I get it. There's certainly something to never having the ball thrown your way, but I don't know. He's still got to do something out there from time to time. And I don't think Sauce was really doing that over
Jeff
the last
Bagwell.
Year.
Do something.
Yeah, you got to do something. You got to do something. Yeah, you might have to just grab that as a drop at some point. Stroud or Stingley? After last year, I think I have to say Stingley's better than Stroud.
Yeah. I think he's better at corner than Stroud is at quarterback.
Nico Collins or Stroud? I think I would say Collins over Stroud, too. And I feel like it's between, to me, it's between Stingley and Collins. And I think Stroud's 4, Anderson's 3, Stingley and Collins are 1 or 2. I don't know which is 1, I don't know which is 2. Gun to my head, I'd probably say, because I like the way Collins plays, Collins, because of his size, speed, strength, ability to run routes, ability to break tackles, ability to shift his way through tackles. When he runs straight down the field, there are very few defenders who actually can stay with him step for step. He uses his size as opposed to a lot of wide receivers, whether it's in traffic or running people over. Stingley, of course, impeccable ball skills, extremely physical. I think it's really close between these two. But if I'm ranking them, it's Nico Collins, 1A, Derek Stingley, 1B, 3, Will Anderson, 4, C.J. Stroud. And then after that, probably put Joe Mixon at 5 and Danielle Hunter at 6.
Yeah. I'd go Anderson, Stingley, Collins, Stroud, and then the rest. How you have it. I'm wondering, like, who's after Mixon? Is it Lassiter?
See, that's where it's tricky. Yeah, because I don't know. Lassiter's in the conversation.
Fairbairn.
Kalen Bullock's in the conversation. Fairbairn. Yeah, Fairbairn.
Missed some easy ones, though.
But he had all those 50-yard field goals at the same time. Tank Dell, when he's healthy, up there.
Yeah.
None of the tight ends.
In the conversation. No.
Literally none of the offensive line.
None of the tight ends, none of the offensive line. I mean,
Aziz Alshire.
If we name enough guys, like Titus Howard does.
Oh,
like,
no.
Come up.
Spare me.
But I'm just saying, if we sit here and just start naming 10 guys, like, then you have to bring up Titus Howard.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Juice Scruggs, probably not.
Definitely not. No, again, like the offensive linemen, like, just throw them
Ed
all.
Ed Ingram, out. We got to see. Wait and see on
Well, he was awful before that, as was Lakin Tomlinson, as were a lot of the offensive linemen on that team. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5, 92.5, 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in, on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. A certain NFL player who has made a habit of making everyone angry is once again making everyone angry. Specifically, this one iconic NFL franchise. Stay put.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Dad, hush!
Tackling the biggest news in the NFL.
This just in.
With Paul Gallant. The 10-minute drill starts now.
Football time. Did have some comments in response to a little mini discussion about who's the top Texans on the team from the 832. When I said Derek Stingley's the best corner in the league. Look at Quinyon Mitchell's numbers from the Eagles. He's the best cornerback in the league. I don't know, man. The numbers I looked at today show Derek Stingley on the chart. He's so much better than everybody else. And I don't really feel like looking at his numbers. I really don't. He's a rookie, right? Sorry, I'm not saying he's better than Stingley
Quinyon
as a rookie.
First round.
Someone said
Cooper DeJean deserves a mention, obviously.
Well, yeah, I think Cooper DeJean might be better than Quinyon Mitchell, but just no one gives him a chance, like my flag football team. What? Hey, that's fine. From the 614, I think this person's saying Charvarius Ward is better than Derek Stingley. Where is he? San Francisco?
Probably Denzel Ward.
Gotcha.
Did he just say Ward?
It just says Ward over Stingley. Like, there's a lot of Wards. Like, I said Jimmy Ward?
No, that's Cleveland Browns' Denzel Ward.
Yeah, okay,
he's
sure.
Good. He's up there. I don't know. I feel like Patrick Surtain is, like, better than all these guys.
Stingley single-handedly won them the Dolphins game.
Yes. That is, yes.
he really did. Like, Texas played a crap in that game. You know? And he had the two picks, including the clincher at the very end. Another texter as far as, like, who's better, Stingley or Anderson. Going to go with Stingley. Seems like corner is harder to play than D-line. Well, obviously different skills. I don't know if I can definitively say that, but
What is this? The Shohei Ohtani, Travis Hunter discussion?
Right, yeah.
Like, what's harder?
To pitch or to hit or to play both sides of the ball in football?
No, it's also hard kicking.
No one talks about that. No one talks about that. From the 713, Travis Hunter will enter the draft soon, so Sting will be second. I mean, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Why are we making projections about rookies so definitively? Like, this guy's going to be the best.
And corner is such a great position to do it for because you either have a lot of stats or you have no stats, and it's because guys don't throw at you. So you could, like, you really can just, whoever you watch, you can just be like, this guy's awesome.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone being better.
Right, exactly.
Meanwhile, like, again, fans of the Eagles are like, I can't imagine anyone being better than Quinyon Mitchell. Or,
you're 100%.
Whatever team you root for, you can just pick a guy.
I do think, though, if I'm looking for a corner, I think Stingley just brings everything that I want.
I think getting interceptions is super important. Being able to turn the ball over is it's a big positive to have.
Deflecting passes, big. And Stingley's one of these guys who misleads you into thinking you actually have a window when you don't, because he has incredible, first off, just breaking speed, but second off, his range is something else. So, I mean, he's second in the league in deflected passes, and he had the 5 picks, too. So, I mean, very productive player, and one of those guys who, not as a gambler, but as a just somebody who tricks you, is able to make more plays than a lot of other guys out there. Some of those guys who shut down people on the other side of the field, there's value to it, but getting those takeaways, it is huge. So that's why I'm saying Stingley, based off of one chart that I saw today, it's the best corner in the NFL.
Yeah.
I'm not going to study the tape.
You should text back all these people with that chart.
Yeah, I wish I could because it's on the text line, of course. Aaron Rodgers is pissing everybody off again. Who would have thought? This time, he's pissing off the Steelers. Cam Hayward, Steelers defensive captain, said on his, quote, not just football, quote, podcast.
Oh.
I wonder what else he talks about. Clearly not football.
Life? I don't know.
He said he's not going to great lengths to recruit Aaron Rodgers to sign with the Steelers. Quote, I ain't doing that darkness retreat. I don't need any of that crap. Either you want to be a Pittsburgh Steeler or you don't. It's that simple. That's the pitch. If you want me to recruit, that's the recruiting pitch. Pittsburgh Steelers. If you want to be a part of it, so be it. If you don't, no skin off my back. DK Metcalf had said the same thing about recruiting a quarterback. Quote, this is a historic organization. They've done the recruiting before I even got here. So whoever wants to come here and try to win as many games as we can, they can join us. But if not, good luck on the other side. Hayward was different, though, because last year when it came to Russell Wilson, he was a little bit more impactful when he was recruiting. Who would you rather recruit? All the things that you know about Russell Wilson and also having seen him play, would you rather recruit Russell Wilson, who, sure, has had good moments in the league, but as someone who's covered him, one of the fakest teammates that ever existed in Seattle? Or would you want to deal with Rodgers and all his nonsense? Of which there's a lot, because he's going to be doing a podcast every single week, and he's going to be talking about whatever he wants to talk about, and you might get thrown under the bus along the way on the Pat McAfee show. Who would you rather deal with? I feel like I'd rather deal with Rodgers because I think Rodgers still might have a little something left. He was on the Jets. I blame the Jets for everything that goes wrong with the actual Jets themselves. So I think Cam Hayward should perhaps take a little bit more delicate approach here. Like, he sounds tough. He sounds like, the defensive captain of the Steelers. But what, you want to keep on rolling out like Justin Fields and Russell Wilson and Kenny Pickett and all these other schlubs, Mason Rudolph, that you guys have brought in over the last couple of years? Come on, man. You've been there a while. The Steelers haven't won since they won the Super Bowl against the Seahawks. Wait, check that. Against the Cardinals back in the 2009-2010 season. So, like, really? Like, it's been a while, man. And the Steelers haven't really been close because the Patriots kept on stepping on their necks. I know the Steelers made it back for that Super Bowl against the Packers, but that was also a while ago. It's been a while. And do you really want to keep going with this? Because, like, the old Ben Roethlisberger's not walking through that door. He's been gone for a while. So, I don't know. I'd probably be at least a little more political talking about Aaron Rodgers like this.
Yeah. I would definitely prefer Rodgers to to Wilson. At the end of the day, just I think he's better. Better than Wilson is. And I do think it's funny that just by taking a week, because right now it's only been a week since legal tampering has opened, just like a quarterback not signing for a week has like driven the NFL world like insane.
It's funny. And
it's crazy.
It's also reminding me of how I've felt from time to time hosting a show, being annoyed that a story will not wrap up. We were like this with Alex Bregman a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We were with this.
I mean, baseball free agency, it's months long.
Right.
This is like not everyone in the league signed in the first 4 days.
OTA,
what the hell?
OTAs aren't till May, I think.
Yeah, it's after the draft.
Right. So relax, everybody. If he signs up, he'll sign up. Now, I think teams would like him to sign up before the draft, but
I mean, even the draft is 37 days. They just showed on ESPN. 37 days away. Like, there's so much time in this free agency. Like, or in this offseason. I still don't really have the, like, why won't this guy sign? It's like, who cares? Like, we're pretty much done anyway. It's really just Wilson and Rodgers, right? Just like the either or of whoever finishes second place in Rodgers, or with Rodgers, going to sign Wilson.
More text. This is in response to Rodgers or Wilson, or just on Aaron Rodgers as a whole. Aaron Rodgers should go to Dallas, Dak to Pittsburgh for a first rounder. Then Jerry can get his little prize, Archie Manning. Oh, so assuming that Aaron Rodgers would help the Cowboys tank through a season. I don't think the Cowboys would tank with Aaron Rodgers under center.
I thought you also said, I thought he was going to go with Jerry Jones' ultimate prize of being the lead topic on every sports talk show for the entire season.
I mean, that makes more sense. Like,
that's his actual goal, is just to be what they talk about on First Take.
They were selectively aggressive, and they signed an old quarterback who likes the ayahuasca. Another from the 713. Rodgers over Wilson, for sure Hall of Famer. He's got goodies. And I don't know if he's going to be distributing the goodies, because I imagine that's against the NFL's drug testing protocol, but that's fair. From the 832, arrogant Rodgers, got him, has dwindled, has absolutely no movement. I would take Wilson, just saying, in my opinion. I didn't think Rodgers was bad at the end of last year, for what it's worth. I didn't think he was bad at the end.
Yeah, I think Rodgers,
but I don't think he's the same player.
I think Rodgers is average. I think Wilson's below average. And like what he was never good at and what he could never do, throw over the middle of the field, is like he's just a more exaggerated version of the like downside of who he was at his best, where it's like it is all just either a long shot, a check down, or running around. But he doesn't have the athleticism anymore to actually run around and find Tyler Lockett after a rainbow ball. He just doesn't actually have it in him to do that anymore.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston on Twitch, King of Twitch says, Steelers are still a way better organization than the Texans ball. I don't know. I mean, historically, obviously,
yeah,
they are.
Because
of the six
Terry
Super
Bradshaw
Bowls.
Days, sure.
And they have been consistent, for sure. But what has that consistency got them, other than skull bleeped by the Patriots in the playoffs, you know, since their last Super Bowl appearance? They had some really good teams. They didn't go very far. I guess they went further than the Texans did then. But of late, if we're talking about like the last 5 years, I guess if you weigh heavily the early Texans years of this turnaround, yeah, not so good. But like the last 2 years, I would say like the Texans are a leg up on the Steelers because of their situation. Like the Steelers are in this weird no man's land where, okay, like 9-8, cool, but no one takes them seriously unless they're Bill Simmons, who for some reason said they were like the best team in the AFC at one point last year.
That is just the most like reactionary NFL season take.
Bill just is not an NFL guy.
Since 2016, the Steelers last won a playoff game in 2016, right?
Yeah.
The Texans won a playoff game in 2016 as well, with Brock Osweiler at quarterback. And they've won
in 2019, They won a playoff game in 2020. They won a playoff game in 2023. They won a playoff game in 2024. Okay. Like, it's been a while for the Steelers.
Like, this is all just, like, medium success, but the Steelers have had less medium success than Texans.
Right. Again, like, came to Twitch, I generally take his football opinions with a grain of salt.
And also, if it's from the Twitch, chances are they're weighing heavily the 1970s. Like, what was true?
Right, when in the 70s? None of us existed and none of it mattered. Oh, yeah.
And baseball was king?
Yeah. On brand. So on brand. They're going to get mad about that one. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in on YouTube at ESPN Houston, on Twitch at ESPN 975. That is the 10-minute drill. See where Aaron Rodgers ends up. Up next, we continue our countdown to Astros opening day. We are 9 days away, and I think the Astros made a decision entirely in the entirely with mental health, the backbone of said decision. What is that decision? You'll find out next. Stick around. It's the Paul Gallant Show.
ESPN 97.5. Got something to say to Paul?
Paul Gallant, what the hell is wrong with you?
I want to hear from you. It was negative about this person, negative about that person. Come on, dude.
Join the conversation by dialing or texting the HRNP listener line. Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Paul Gallant.
Some more comments on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. People really are into what's next at the Dallas Cowboys quarterback position conversation. The last segment, someone suggested, hey, Cowboys sign Aaron Rodgers. It helps them tank. They'll eventually draft Arch Manning. Here's another one from Huey and Spring. Paul, Jerry's going to shop Dak and take Quinn Ewers in the draft. Ewers has been working with Mike McCarthy the whole offseason and moves to Dallas. I hope we're in the same boat in wanting this drama for the Cowboys. Hang on. So he's been working with Mike McCarthy this offseason? Honestly, I wouldn't know, because Brian Schottenheimer is now the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, that, if anything, that's a snag in this. But, wow.
Hang on a second.
Cowboys fans really, really not down with Dak. Or at least the people commenting, really not down with Dak. Who... didn't he sign a contract last offseason?
Right. After having...
guys, I think he's going to be the quarterback this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to, too. After having maybe his best season ever. I imagine they will think about trying to pull something off around the draft because...
I mean, they did... Cooper Rush did... He went to Baltimore. Kind of weird.
That was the guy to have... that was 100% the guy to...
be the backup.
Be the starter. So that the Cowboys can tank.
To tank.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, no, well, wait, did they, is Trey Lance still on the team?
Yeah.
That might be the guy.
Yeah, that's true. But there's something about Trey Lance starting where the tanking's so blatant that no one wants to do it.
They'll get investigated.
But yeah, Quinn Ewers has been working with Mike McCarthy, former Cowboys coach, as he gets ready for the draft. That's noteworthy.
There we go.
Interesting. From the 713, someone says, slow down, Luka got traded. Anything can happen. That's right. Anything is possible.
Yeah, really awesome player got traded.
All right, guys. We're 9 days away from Astros pitchers and catchers. What am I talking about? We're 9 days away from Astros pitchers and catchers and players playing opening day.
Reporting to Houston.
Reporting to Houston for opening day. Yeah, sorry. I don't know what's going on there. Anyway, let's give you that countdown. Give me that bone.
Another year, another inevitable AL West title.
For the fourth year in a row and the seventh consecutive full season, the Astros are the AL West champion.
We're counting you down to Astros opening day 2025 on March 27th.
It's a lot of people that count us out early. We don't don't quit. We got grit.
We are built for this.
Let's go!
Pretty crazy to think we're less than 10 days away from opening day, especially considering that baseball's opening day technically was today in Tokyo between the Dodgers and Cubs in a game that started at 5 a.m. Game two also tomorrow at 5 a.m. But we're just 9 days away. Framber Valdez is officially the Astros opening day starter. Joe Espada announced this on Sunday. He informed him of the decision Sunday morning, reminding him, quote, "This is 4 years straight. The responsibility and the importance of a team that has had this much success, what it means to us that he's the opening day starter, it's a special moment for him. Among qualified major leaguers, Valdez ranks first in wins, fifth in innings, and sixth in ERA. Over the last 3 years, he's been in the top 10 in AL Cy Young voting each of the last 3 years. Certainly has gotten more consistent. The meltdowns happen from time to time. Some of them happen in the playoffs with less temper tantrums. The temper tantrums that happen in games, they still happen, but hey, look at that. The consistency is there. And as awesome as Hunter Brown was for much of last year, the Astros were always going to make Framber the opening day starter. But one of the added elements is if they made Framber not the opening day starter, I guarantee you he'd be pissed about it. And it would potentially affect his play. That's something you always got to have in mind with him. The man who the Astros have to wear specific jerseys for so that he feels his best. They do a lot to accommodate him. I am curious to how much he will ultimately sign for after his last season with the Astros this coming year. I do not think it'll be with the Astros. If they're not going to bring back, you know, Kyle Tucker or some of the other players, Gerrit Cole or Springer or Correa, are they going to really change things up for Framber Valdez? I doubt it, but he is your opening day starter. So that's nice. Christian Walker, Astros' projected first baseman, assuming he is healthy, is going to get into games this weekend and be ready for opening day per Joe Espada. So that lends itself to some questions about who is going to be left off the Astros' opening day roster. The Chronicle put together a piece with Matt Kawahara writing it, suggesting these five names as the biggest question marks about what you do with in training camp. A couple of pitchers, Steven Okert, who's been doing a great job as a reliever. Luis Contreras, another one on those lines. Then you've got, of course, Cam Smith, who we have talked ad nauseum. You got Brendan Rodgers at second base, who is a gold glover and finally playing at sea level for the first time in his career. Yes, that's actually a quote that he has said could lead to him being better than he was when he was in Colorado, where he won a gold glove. And then John Singleton is the big question. And I mean, I think if you're John Singleton, you're hoping that Christian Walker isn't going to be ready to go for opening day, because I think Singleton's in danger. He's not playing well, even though he's in the best shape of his life. He's not really versatile. Like, you can only play first base or DH. And while he's good at occasionally drawing walks, like, you want a guy who can actually hit. So, I think his numbers in spring are very poor. And I wonder what happens if Christian Walker is good to go for opening day, because it does seem like the oblique injury he's recovering from, he will be fine for opening day. Because if they send down, if they don't have him on the opening day roster, that's it for Singleton. Like, he's a free agent because they're out of options for him.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, like, kind of make or break for Singleton. And the make is, like, maybe you stick around while Christian Walker, maybe Christian Walker's healthy, but, you know, the Astros feel they need a backup, a steady backup first baseman to give Walker days off or whatever, or if he re-aggravates something, that they keep Singleton around early in the season for that. But it definitely feels like when we talk about Cam Smith, when we talk about DeZenzo,
Zach DeZenzo, right.
To a lesser degree, Brendan Rodgers, too. Like, it feels like Singleton's kind of on the cut line, so to speak, when it comes to you know, how we talk about training camp, that's where Singleton, I think, finds himself.
Feel bad for him because he's in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, and he's been solid the last couple of years.
He hasn't been bad. He has been so much better than Jose Abreu,
yeah,
which is such a low bar to clear.
And like, he shouldn't be a starting first baseman for a team that's trying to win a World Series. So it's like, part of it, you know, he is doing a good enough job. It's just he's been so overstressed because Abreu was such a disaster.
Mm-hmm. So you see more of him, and hey, he has the two home run game. He has the one game where he hits a home run, and you get excited, especially the bat flips cool.
Yeah, he should be a glimpses of backup or pinch hitter where you remember the game where he had two home runs. You remember how he drew a walk in game 5 of the ALCS in 2023. Like, it should be more of a moments thing as opposed to seeing him play 80 games a season. You're like, yeah, we can. I feel like we can do better. So if Christian Walker is completely healthy, I can't imagine that's awesome for Singleton.
Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. 9 days away from opening day for the Houston Astros. Up next, the Rockets won a weird game last night. Should we be happy about it or pissed about how sloppy it was? That's on the table along with a lot of other things. The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. It's the Paul Gallant Show. Stay put.
ESPN 97.5.